Many seniors and adults with a disability or illness could come under the care of a guardian who manages their assets. So how can you be certain a guardian is acting in the best interests of your loved one? Here to discuss adult guardianship and protections for your family members are National Master Guardian Emeritus and retired director of the Central Ohio Area Agency on Aging's Volunteer Guardian Program, Julia Knack, Disability Rights Ohio Executive Director Michael Kirkman, Pro Seniors Managing Attorney Miriam Scheline, and Jessica Wayne with the Department for Aging and Independent Living in Kentucky. You can join us, 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Good afternoon, Jessica. Thank you for joining us.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Julia, good afternoon. Miriam, thank you for being here as well. And Michael, thank you for being here to talk with us, too.
Pleasure to be here.
Can somebody start by explaining what is guardianship? Julia, what does it mean?
Guardianship is a court appointment where someone alleges that an individual has lost the capacity to make their own decisions, and the judge or hearing officer in the probate court, using whatever information has been filed and taking testimony, will decide if the person needs someone else to make their decisions. It's a very severe court action. It's really a club that takes people's rights away and reduces the adult status to that of legal status to that of a child. And should be used very sparingly.
And so can somebody be put under guardianship without even knowing that it's coming, or is that something where generally they're aware that this is going to happen?
It's very rare. In Ohio, at least, we do require 7 court days' notice, and the court investigator is sent out to interview the individual and report back their observations. The person does have a right to counsel if they object to the guardianship. So there is due process in our statute.
And Jessica, how does the whole process even get started? What in particular triggers it?
In Kentucky, it's a little different. In Kentucky, all trials are done by jury trial. So there's 2 processes. There's a process for an emergency guardianship if it cannot wait until a jury trial's done, and that has to be done with a 3-day notice to all parties. In Kentucky, we do appoint a guardian ad litem, an attorney for the client, and that starts the process. And then a jury trial is usually done shortly after. So depending on the county, in which each 120 counties are a little bit different, it may take from a month to 3 months to have the jury trial. Our Kentucky laws send out evaluators. They're called interdisciplinary team members. And each one of those individuals go out and evaluate the person. And they report back to the court on whether or not they feel the person needs a guardian or conservator or both.
Now, Michael, in the case of somebody with a disability, what are some of the things that can trigger possible guardianship for them?
Well, frequently it's a family member who is being told by a school or a medical provider that they're not going to accept consent for the person with an intellectual disability, even though that's not correct and that they have to look at that person's capacity individually. We see for people who have mental illnesses, sometimes when they leave or discharged from a hospital stay, they are transferred to a nursing home, and the nursing home will insist that there be a guardian so that the person is medicated. And I have to say, these are the nursing homes that can't fill their beds any other way. So they're some of the worst nursing homes in the state. We see folks in a lot of our work with guardians is trying to get them to get the people out of the nursing homes. It's interesting. Kentucky's instituted some reforms that we've been trying to get in Ohio for a long time. Most states, about 37 states, have mandatory trial counsel before the appointment of a guardian. Ohio's is on request. So every person who gets a guardian doesn't have an attorney. And of course, we're asking somebody who's alleged to be incapacitated and may be confused by medication or their current circumstances to make a decision whether they want counsel or not instead of the court automatically appointing it. And that's a cost savings problem. That's money that no one wants to appropriate. So it's interesting that Kentucky, Texas, Florida all require mandatory counsel.
And didn't Ohio two or three years ago, didn't Ohio just institute some reforms in their
law? We do have some new rules. They are rules coming out of the Supreme Court of Ohio, and they are to provide guidance to probate courts, and they are to provide certain standards for guardians. We do have improvements because of that. They're good first steps. We now have to have training. Guardians have to have 6 hours of pre-service and 3 hours of continuing ed to continue to be eligible to be appointed. So that's a huge improvement, but it's not enough. I'm very jealous of Kentucky's assessment process because here we can take the word of a physician who has never seen the person before but is seeing them for the first time in the hospital when they're sick. I don't want to be evaluated at that point, and it's not going to give you a good accounting of what that person can do.
Yeah, Miriam, did Ohio go far enough? You think there's a lot of room still for improvement?
Well, I think there's always, room for improvement. I've seen a lot of improvement over the years. One of the things when we're talking about an attorney, for instance, it wasn't that long ago where many counties wouldn't allow a ward to have an attorney on a termination motion that they'd filed. That has been changed through litigation, but those things take time. So, a ward who may be physically unable has got to get to the court for the hearing to make the request for an attorney. There isn't even a procedure where the ward can, call it in. Those kind of, issues are problems with Ohio's guardianship process. I think there's good things in that, for instance, you have to establish clear and convincing evidence to terminate someone's rights and make them incompetent. So we have some good things, but as you said, we can always improve in that guardianship process. But to a large extent, I think many of our courts do try to make it the last resort. Our rules also provide, the court's supposed to look at least restrictive alternatives. Okay. And it may be a matter of enforcement, county by county, but yes. I think that's something that there are the basis for some protections.
What are some of the alternatives to guardianship?
Well, one would be still through the courts is what we call a conservatorship, okay? You have the benefits of court review. So that's what, the benefit of guardianship is. The court is the guardian. The court would be the superior conservator, and the employee of the court, namely the one who's appointed to be the conservator, has to file accountings, has to get approval from the court for what they spend, have to notify the court of changes with regard to the individual. That would be through the court process. Other alternatives are, of course, powers of attorney. The benefit of the power of attorney is you don't go through the courts. The downside of the power of attorney is you don't go through the courts. You don't have supervision. So you have financial, exploitation, unfortunately, if you pick the wrong power of attorney.
So is that power of attorney, is it a contractual thing? Is that why it doesn't go through the courts?
Correct. Okay. Correct. The individual should have a health care power
pick,
of attorney.
And that's, and,
right.
Okay.
Right. But frankly, you pick, parent picks a child, right? And they believe that child is going to be working for their best interest, and unfortunately, in our business, we see a lot of calls where they don't.
May not always be the case.
That is correct.
But
that is correct.
But if you do that, if you name somebody power of attorney, then can you still be put in guardianship? Can a court can they overrule that?
They can overrule that. But again, the question is the least restrictive alternative. So if you have a power of attorney who's doing what they're supposed to be doing, there's really no basis or reason to strip the ward of their rights going forward. Now, we get the family battles, sure, but that power of attorney still has to continue even where there's a guardianship, that the power of attorney is the choice for the court unless there's a specific motion showing that power of attorney is not or that attorney, in fact, is not working for the best interest of the individual. So, yes, it can still happen, but if you've put these in place, and most of our powers of attorney, I should add, you indicate your preference if a guardian should be appointed. You put down who you want the court to appoint. You do have controls.
Is there an alternative that's better than any of the ones you've just talked about, or are they all pretty much equally, each one has its pros and cons, and you just have to weigh them and decide what fits your situation best?
Well, we always recommend, when you're at any age, everyone should have a health care power of attorney, okay? Because a healthcare power of attorney is someone who makes medical decisions for you if you cannot do it for yourself. That is just one I always recommend for everyone, you know, any age. There's pros and cons with regard to financial powers of attorney. Those go into effect when you give it to that individual. Once the horse is out of the barn, it's hard to put it back if there's exploitation going on.
Julia?
One of the things I wanted to add, just to clarify, the conservatorship does not adjudicate the person incompetent.
Right.
And that's what makes it such a nice
tool. So in a guardianship, they're ruling on your competency, and that's
correct.
Why they put you in guardianship.
Correct.
Okay.
And I think
correct.
It's a really good thing for friends, family. If there's a relationship issue here and the person is reluctant to get involved and help, if you have the court oversight on the conservator, then maybe your church friend will do this. Maybe your next door neighbor would help if you don't have family. So it's a really good tool with a little bit more teeth than the power of attorney has.
Right. And it's very rarely used.
Michael?
Well, and the other alternative is adult protective services and the court-ordered protectorship that is available for both elders and people with developmental disabilities. And those are rarely used in this state. Ohio has one of the lowest funded adult protective services schemes in the country, 48th, I think, the last time I looked. So we have, every county has an adult protective services function that can lead to a protective services order that requires services to be planned for, that does not require appointment of a guardian or a finding of permanent incompetence, does require a finding of specific incapacity. But we don't use that because there's no funding for it in this state. And the legislature 2 budgets ago put some funding in the beginning of a process we thought would actually raise the amount of money going to the counties, and then took it out in the last budget. So unless you have a really strong senior services level levy, you're not going to have that service available. And they're going to run to the probate court and say, hey, we need a guardian for this person because they're being exploited. And then the court has to find a guardian somewhere, and they're that leads to a situation where they may pick the wrong person, or they have a person that's doing guardianships that has way too many wards, and that's what we've seen in Franklin County for a period of time that did not lead to good outcomes. And so everybody's a little bit desperate because of this structural problem. Guardianship should be a last resort in a comprehensive protective services scheme. And everybody from the American Bar Association to AARP to the Congress to the GAO have recognized that over the time. And Ohio is way behind in that work. So that's something we all work on at the state level. And frankly, we're not very successful right now.
And Jessica, are the alternatives pretty much the same in Kentucky? Or are there some different things that Kentucky does from Ohio?
The difference that we have is our conservatorship is actually done by adjudication. So when someone files a petition for disability in Kentucky, they are looking at both the financial and the personal side of whether or not a person can make decisions. So when the jury comes back, they are making a decision and adjudicating disability on both personal affairs and financial. Now, our alternative is curatorship, and that's done through probate court. Our guardianship is done through district court. So curatorship is an agreement without the need for a jury trial and without that part of the adjudication process. Another option that, you know, has become popular in recent years is supported decision making. And we see that a lot in our intellectually disabled population, where they have a team that's already around them and established that can assist them with making decisions without the requirement of taking away anyone's rights.
Julia, you hear these stories about guardians who take advantage of their wards or people that might get placed in guardianship without knowing it, although it sounds like in Kentucky and Ohio we're a little bit safer in that respect. But what are the potentials for abuse to arise in that guardianship arrangement?
I think the real problem we have is that we have not insisted that guardians be trained in how they are to conduct themselves, and that courts are not always aware of what they need to do to monitor those guardianships. If someone is willing to lie to the court, there's not a lot you can do, and I think that's happened in a couple of the most recent examples. But to the extent that we teach guardians what they're supposed to do, I think we are better off at protecting the people under guardianship.
So what's the workload like for guardians? I mean, how many wards does a guardian typically have?
The national standards recommend 1 to 20. It's not going to happen in Ohio because we don't have the funding.
Well, we've seen people who have had as many as 400.
Yes,
oh, 500. Gosh. And that person ended up being criminally charged and sadly committed suicide before that progressed any farther. But that was where a court had appointed this person guardian for 400 people because they didn't think they had any other alternatives. There was no public guardianship function available to them to pick. And sometimes there are lawyers who practice in front of the probate court and they're not particularly good guardians. Some people who are lawyers and have guardianship practices have social workers who work for them and basically run case management for their wards. I will say in the county where there was 400, that judge has taken aggressive steps. That it's impossible.
That's hard to believe.
It's impossible. And we had lots of interactions with this fellow and his clients, his wards, and to trying to keep him on the straight and narrow. But a new probate judge came in and the dispatch ran a series and that all led to the rules that Julia was talking about being actually promulgated. So there were some good things that came out of that. But in the meantime, finding anybody to be guardian has become harder. And at some point, the state's going to have to look at how do we establish a public guardianship office, much as Franklin County has done now and done a good job of that.
Yeah. I think it's important to understand that guardianship is not really legal work. You do need to do some legal paperwork in order to obtain the guardianship. But most of what guardians do is medical advocacy, is overseeing the life, making sure that the person is getting what they need to have a good quality of life.
But it's not actually caregiving, is it?
It is not hands-on caregiving. It's a third-party relationship, yes.
Jessica, what about the ratio of guardians to wards in Kentucky? Is it about the same? Do you have the same situation there?
In Kentucky, our guardianship for the state is a guardian of last resort. So we're a bit different than Ohio, who does county-specific. We are for the entire state. So we have currently over 4,400 clients throughout the state that we are appointed as guardian. And our caseloads range from 60 to 80 per worker. So it's very high, and we continuously try to reduce that. But the number of clients that we're getting it has increased phenomenally. So we get about 90 new cases per month.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. To me, even having 10 wards or 20 wards seems like a lot to me.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a difficult job.
And that's one of the problems. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Jessica.
I was going to say, the nice thing about Kentucky that we do is we separate our field workers who are social workers from our benefits and our fiduciary staff. So in Frankfort, where is our state capital, we have staff here that are accountants and benefits, and they apply for Medicaid for our clients, and they handle the writing of checks. So our workers, how we protect our clients and our staff is our field workers don't have direct access to the money. There is multiple processes we have in place for approval that our field workers never have to access the funds directly. They have to go through a request for payment, then their supervisor approves that payment, then we have someone from our fiduciary branch that finally approves it and then sends out a check. So we protect our clients from being exploited by making sure that there's multiple levels of approval for any funds to go out.
And Jessica, ultimately, is it who pays? Is it the state or the ward? I kind of lost track in that whole sequence.
For guardianship?
Yes. Who pays the guardian?
If the client has funds, by our statute, we're allowed to take a fee. But many of our clients are indigent. So currently, we have multiple levels of approval. Unless they're in certain facilities and they have over $500 in their account, we don't take a fee. So the majority of our clients do not get a fee, and it's just paid by state general funds in Kentucky.
And Julia, the case in Ohio?
Oh, it's nothing like that at all. There is no general fund at the state level to pay guardians to do anything. Some courts have a small amount of money that they will use. But there's very little funding for guardianship in Ohio, and that's what leads to some of the exploitation we saw.
I'd like to get to Tracy's phone call. Good afternoon, Tracy. Go right ahead.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a mental health counselor in Hamilton County, and I am really glad that you're talking about this because I currently work with residents in such nursing homes. I have several right now who could very likely, with some assistance, live independently. And due to them having a guardian who undoubtedly is overworked and underpaid, if paid at all, and their lack of access, these folks are languishing in nursing homes.
We have a program in Ohio called Home Choice at the state level, and nursing home residents can ask for a home choice assessment. A team will come in and assess whether they're able to live independently, and then we'll provide funding to help them set up independently an apartment. So I would recommend home choice for those folks, and guardians are not supposed to stand in the way of that.
And if the caller goes to our website, disabilityrightsohio.org, we have information about home choice. And if you want to call our intake service, we can connect you with someone who can give you more information about that. We do a lot of work with home choice.
So, Mary, we've got about a minute left here. What do you see as some of the things they need to change to improve this whole system?
Well, that's a good question.
Sounds like one thing we need is we need more guardians.
Well, obviously, you need some more guardians, but the question is, a better understanding of how to work this thing necessarily without guardians. There are a variety of ways of doing that, as you indicated with the mental health individual. One of the things that we pro seniors did was go after the Department of Medicaid, who was requiring an individual who applied for Medicaid to get their own guardian. They would deny the application unless, someone was appointed their guardian to apply, okay, because you couldn't get access to their assets or their records or whatever. That was eliminated under the rules. So a lot of these individuals do not need to have a guardian just to get Medicaid. But there are still counties who say that. So there are a lot of ways to work the system without going through the guardianship.
Sounds like we need some uniformity, too, because everybody's different.
We need a better process of assessing people's needs and abilities than we have. And right now, as I said, you can get a guardian with a resident in a hospital saying you have dementia. We need a better system.
Well, thanks to all of you for joining me today.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Master Guardian Emeritus and retired director of the Central Ohio Area Agency on Aging's Volunteer Guardian Program, Julia Knack. Disability Rights Ohio Executive Director Michael Kirkman, Pro Seniors Managing Attorney Miriam Scheline, and Jessica Wayne with the Department for Aging and Independent Living.